I'm Kim Masters, host of KCRW's The Business. Thanks for listening to our monthly podcast. Now here's the host, Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Schneider, and this is The Spinoff. This month we've got Joe Adalian of Vulture.com joining us once again from KUNV in Las Vegas. Hey, Joe.
Hola, Schneider.
And we have a guest today. Joining us from the Argo Studios in New York is Willa Paskin, the TV critic for Slate.com. Welcome, Willa.
Thank you for having me.
So Willa is our guest this month because AJ Marischal, who was our third spinoff member from the start, has left the world of TV reporting to make an actual living. She's anchored Variety, as of course we know the esteemed trade loves to say, to pursue a career writing for TV and film. So she'll be on the creative side of the business now, and we wish her all the luck in the world. And maybe one day, guys, we'll be bantering about a show she's created, and maybe that show will even be a scripted adaptation of The Spinoff, or probably not.
It could happen. We love you, AJ.
All right, so for the lineup this month, we're going to talk about the recent executive shakeup at ABC and the troubles that that network has been facing. Then we'll also talk about a dilemma that we've all written about in the past, and David Carr just this week in the New York Times discussed, is there too much great TV to watch, and what are we doing about it? And finally, we'll talk Amazon. Can this website rebrand itself to be a viable competitor to Netflix and HBO? It's been making original series and just picked up four new ones, including one from X-Files creator Chris Carter. But is anyone watching? All right, guys, first up, let's talk ABC. So it's been a rough year for the Alphabet Network, which is mired in fourth place in the adult 18 to 49 demographic. One big issue is that it doesn't have NFL football to fall back on like every other major network. But a few big moves this week could actually wind up as game changers for ABC. First off, the new limited run series Resurrection debuted to surprisingly big numbers. And in a even bigger shift, Ann Sweeney, the president of Disney ABC Television Group, announced that she's leaving the company after 14 years. Now, Sweeney's oversight included ABC, but now she says she's exiting to pursue a career as a TV director, which is quite an unusual announcement. Joe, so Ann Sweeney leaving, is this a new opportunity for ABC to shake things up?
Well, it depends, because here's the thing. I think most of the focus when people talk about ABC and its troubles has been on Paul Lee, who's the president of the network and runs things day to day.
Right, but, but he does serve at the pleasure of Ann Sweeney.
Yes, he does serve at the pleasure of Ann Sweeney. I don't think Ann Sweeney has been micromanaging, but the question is whether or not she has been micromanaging or what defines his leadership. Here's what's interesting to me about Paul Lee. Paul Lee is somebody who comes from the world of cable. He comes from the world of managing niche networks, and he helped build BBC America and, more successfully, ABC Family. So he knows the new world we're in. And yet the way Paul Lee has run ABC is if the network were still living in a world of the 1980s, where big broad hits are the things to go after, and it's been this push and pull, because the programming ABC has been doing actually has been largely pretty good. I would put ABC's development the last couple of years up against NBC, Fox, or CBS. They've had their fair share of shows that have captured buzz, that have captured some critical notice. They've done some good work. Where they've run into problem is the fact that they've had horrible scheduling. They've been putting shows on and then pulling them off because they don't think the ratings are big enough. They've been trying to go after these big ratings that they think somehow are out there that may be like the ratings that CBS has had. And I don't think that can be the case. I think they need to sort of figure out a way to manage for the new world we're in, which is if you've got a show, if it works, if it has a core audience, find a way to make that show work financially, whether it means getting a different revenue stream from Netflix or Amazon or Hulu, whether it means reducing costs, whatever it is, make it work. That's what Fox does. That's what NBC's done to a lesser degree during their years of trouble. ABC, on the other hand, has shows that are great, like Suburgatory, like Happy Endings, like Cougar Town,
The case of those last two shows, they gave up both of those shows.
They gave up both of those shows, and they shouldn't have, because they took off those shows to try a whole bunch of other shows that were even more generic, that didn't strike a chord with viewers, and where do they end up? Even lower rated. You know, it's much better these days to stick with shows that work rather than going for a brass ring that I'm going to argue does not exist at all, and it's stupidity. And I think that sort of management, that sort of not maximizing assets, you know, making decisions like putting a very young oriented sitcom like Mixology, putting that after a broad family comedy like Modern Family, is just stupid, particularly when you've got a great show called Trophy Wife, and you stick it in Siberia Tuesday nights at 9:30.
Well, Joe, you and I have both suggested how frustrated we are that ABC hasn't put Trophy Wife behind Modern Family, because that show was developed with that time slot in mind, and it's such an obvious scheduling move that the fact that they haven't done it sort of just boggles the mind. But
it's malpractice.
I just want to say, we started this conversation talking about Resurrection, which got 13 million viewers. So I agree that ABC has sort of been reaching for the stars and with its comedies. But it did just have this big hit, which it might not be able to maintain. But, it advertised it during the Oscars with a bunch of great creepy ads and a ton of people watched. I mean, that's exactly what they've been trying to do when they finally did it.
Yeah, Willa, I know you just wrote about Resurrection. What did you think of it?
I think Resurrection is very similar to this French show called The Returned, which is a fantastic show. It's
on
Netflix
now. Yeah, I love
that show.
Love that
show. It's great. And it's better than Resurrection. I mean, no offense to Resurrection. So just as someone who had seen The Returned, it was pretty hard to kind of watch this kind of wan copycat of it. That said, when I had seen Resurrection about a year ago or whenever upfronts were, so 8 months ago or so, I was intrigued by it. It's interesting. It has a kind of crazy, creepy premise. I think there's some really good acting in it. It has a really nice mood. It seems like it could go in a lot of strange directions. So I'm not surprised that people were interested in it. I mean, obviously, we'll have to see what happens. I've only seen two episodes.
But Willa, talk about the rest of the ABC schedule. Do you consider yourself an ABC viewer? Do you watch many of their shows? I mean, they do have hits like Scandal, and then they have longer in the two shows like Grey's Anatomy that are still on the air.
Well, I will confess that Grey's Anatomy is the show that is like the show for me of all the shows on TV that I watch not for work at all, just because I really like feel like it's good company and I love it and I've seen it forever.
Yeah,
so
an old friend.
Right, exactly. So I watch Scandal and I watch Grey's and I DVR Trophy Wife. I don't know that I have a really strong relationship with ABC at this point. Not that I quite do with any of the networks, to be honest. So,
well, I was going to say, that's this point. So you mentioned Willa Resurrection success. It speaks to my point, which is that ABC has done a good job developing shows that can strike a chord with viewers. That's Resurrection. And they've done that with Nashville. They've done that with Revenge. They've done that with Happy Endings, which struck a chord early on. But then as soon as something works, they find a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. Nashville was a show that worked, but ABC decided we want to make this feel more like Scandal. So they made it look more like Scandal. They got rid of some people involved with the show. They sort of got Kelly Corey to make it more like Scandal. As a result, the ratings are way down. Critics have sort of largely abandoned the show. Happy Ending, Suburgatory was working fine at 8:30.
But Joe, is ABC really doing any worse than any of the other networks? The only difference is that ABC doesn't have major sports.
No, ABC is doing worse than other networks.
Nashville, that's not fair, because I think Nashville got in trouble almost from its second episode. It had a great pilot.
And from what I understand, it's because ABC was pressuring the creators of the show to not go in the direction that they picked up. They changed their mind. They picked up one show, but then they immediately decided to move the show in a different direction, because at the same time that Nashville was coming on, Scandal was ascendant. And ABC management said, let's make everything more like Scandal. They did the same thing with Revenge, which its creator wanted to do as a limited series with only 13 episodes every year. They said, no, you're going to be like Scandal. You're going to do outrageous storylines. And if you don't like it, we'll fire are you? They fired him.
Well, Revenge literally was always outrageous. It was Revenge. I mean, I think that, it's interesting as we're talking about this. ABC is obviously home to a bunch of shows that I am inclined to really like, which is sort of a female-centric soap opera, whether or not they're all as crazy as Scandal or not. They do really are expert at that. And even when they're not expert at it, they're sort of the people that control that territory. There's not a lot of other people doing shows like that.
Willa, are you worried actually that with Ann Sweeney leaving, that may signal a change in direction, that maybe they actually do have a decent formula in targeting this 18 to 49 female demographic?
I mean, I don't think that any network would do away with that, something that's working, just because it's suddenly run by a man. I think that everyone's interested in what works. They've obviously have in the past tried to kind of make more male-centric programming, have made bids for that, and it hasn't quite worked. The season that they had, like, their four sitcoms, Man Up, that were all at, Last Man Standing, they sort of made a play for a male audience, which they'd kind of lost after lost, and that hasn't particularly worked out for them. I'm sure I can't imagine that they don't want to appeal to men, too. But obviously, this Scandal, for example, is like the thing that's working. So I don't know why they wouldn't continue.
Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a good example of a show that ABC wasn't quite sure what to do with it because obviously it's built-in fan base of Marvel fans, but at the same time you have to sort of develop it with the ABC audience in mind as well. So as a result, they sort of were trying to serve two masters, ended up serving no one. It seems like now they're finally deciding to let's just focus on the Marvel fans. But is it maybe a little too late?
I mean, S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing fine, and it's going to be back next season, obviously.
Right.
And when you add in DVRs, it does okay. The thing is, look, you know, you asked Mike whether or not ABC is worse off than any other network. I think to some degree, yes, it has many of the same issues that Fox and NBC has, and the difference is it doesn't have NFL. It also doesn't have a big competition show the way that NBC does have with Voice, and Fox until this year has had with American Idol, which is still does okay. So that has definitely been part of the problem, but it's also been a problem of just, you know, ABC having an itchy trigger finger. Fox is sticking with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, New Girl, and Mindy Project even as the ratings collapse. NBC stuck with Parks and Recreation and Community even though the ratings were going nowhere. ABC, on the other hand, doesn't. They keep moving on, and that's a big part of the problem is comedy-wise. And the other big problem with ABC is they just keep thinking if we throw enough stuff out there, eventually something will work. Now, Resurrection did work, but only after Killer Women failed, Mind Games failed, The Assets failed, Black Box is going to fail whenever it does premiere. I mean, ABC has just thrown so much out, they confuse viewers. Every couple weeks, it's a brand new show, it's a brand new asset, and I feel they feel like they're scurrying around sort of like monkeys just trying to figure out what works. And yeah, they did get lucky with Resurrection, and it could work. We'll see what happens over the course of 2 to 3 weeks. I'm optimistic. I just feel ABC's problem has not been in creating good shows or buzz shows. It's done that well. It's been in simply accepting what it has and making the most of it rather than hoping for something bigger. I still go back to that.
Willa, do you think the success of Resurrection actually bought Paul Lee some time? We've been hearing rumors for a while that he may be on the way out, but those are big numbers. And one of the biggest launches that we've seen in a couple years, especially in the spring and especially after daylight savings time began. So what do you think?
I mean, I don't know if it bought Paul Lee more time or not. I think it's a good sign that for anybody to get those kind of numbers at this point in time with a drama. I think, you know, always anytime a show launches like that, you're like, oh, so they can still do that. It's still possible,
right.
You know.
Pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. And, you know, and I think, you know, while I agree with you, Joe, I do think also if shows are doing really terribly, like a lot of those shows that have stayed on Fox or NBC are doing, you know, if that's the new normal. I think there is something to be said for stability, but there's also something to be said for sort of not accepting that it's just going to be terrible forever. I mean, that may be naive and not the world that we live in anymore, but I don't think it's so insane for a network to take things that are underperforming, even if parts of the internet really, really love them, and just to decide, you know, it's enough. Like, this is never going to do great for us, and we will try something else. I mean, the thing about ABC, I think that's interesting compared to certainly NBC, is that they actually have in their more recent history huge hits that were kind of new. That is Modern Family being an example of that.
Right.
These
Scandal.
Other networks, right, Scandal, haven't really had. It's been so, like, so much famine for them. They're really, it doesn't even seem possible. Like, what would a huge hit, could NBC launch a huge hit at this point? It's a real question.
Well, they have, actually. I mean, The Blacklist is a huge hit. It's a bigger hit than Resurrection in many ways.
But also, by the way, I mean, don't forget, ABC, I mean, they were patient to some degree with Happy Endings. They brought it back couple of times before giving up the
ghost. You've been talking to too many agents and network scheduling executives. I'm sorry. I mean, look,
And Cougar Town the same way. They kept bringing it back, and they found
and
a
nothing,
way to keep the show by moving it
you
to
know
TBS.
What, Mike,
they own that show,
you
and,
know what,
and that show still is going.
You know what? Yeah, they kept it going, but ABC doesn't reap the benefit. Nothing has done better after Modern Family than Cougar Town. Now, obviously, part of that is the fact that all TV's gone down since then. Nonetheless, what have they gotten from doing that? Why not have 100 episodes that you own that you make commercials on? Yes, they'll get the money from it off of TBS. They could have stayed. You know, here's the thing. That strategy, that thinking makes sense to some degree if you're CBS with limited time slots and not a lot of room and very little room on your schedule. You've got to keep recycling and regenerating. And yet CBS actually proves to be more patient with shows sometimes. It's kept Hawaii Five-0 on even though it proved to be a constant disappointment on Monday nights. They moved it to Friday. It suffered a little bit in the ratings, but they found a way at CBS to get a huge amount of international revenue from it to reach older viewers, if not younger viewers, Hawaii Five-0 will run 5 years.
Well, Joe, CBS is still playing a different game, and they haven't been as patient on the comedy side, and they've got some real issues on their comedy side, too.
No, I think – but my point is CBS's schedule is tight, and yet I still feel in some ways they're more patient than a network like ABC, which look at how many shows they've launched over the last year and a half. It's madness to throw that many shows at viewers and expect people to catch up.
The thing that mystifies me a little bit more about what ABC is up to is, you know, you listed those shows, Mind Games, Mixology, these shows that they've just actually put out in the last couple months. And it does feel like, except for Resurrection, they had no real backing from the show, like from the network. The network didn't even really promote them particularly strongly. So it's like, especially with that volume of product, it's sometimes you get the feeling it's like they just have it and they're just like throwing it on the air, and then maybe like miraculously people will tune in. But that's not really how it works. You really have to kind of prime the pump to get people interested. There's too much on.
Right, right. That's the problem.
Everyone just to show up.
The problem of picking up too many shows and not having the marketing budget to back it up. But I guess we'll wait until May, the May upfronts, and see A, what they put on their schedule, but B, even more interestingly, who's actually going to be up on stage announcing the fall ABC schedule. So coming up after the break, is there too much TV? Are we drowning and having to keep up with too much good stuff? Sounds like a high-quality problem to have, but we'll discuss it next. This is The Spinoff from KCRW.
Do you like KCRW on Facebook? If not, you're missing out on the latest music updates, program exclusives, and in-studio video clips. Join the conversation at facebook.com/KCRW.
We're back with The Spinoff. I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide Magazine, along with Joe Adalian of Vulture.com, and our guest this month, Willa Paskin, the TV critic for Slate.com. So last Sunday, TV viewers were faced with the season finale of HBO's True Detective, an episode of AMC's top-rated The Walking Dead, the premiere of ABC's Resurrection, the launch of Fox's Cosmos, an episode of Showtime's Shameless, Bravo's mega hit, The Real Housewives of Atlanta, and even E's Keeping Up with the Kardashians, which, Joe, I know which one you were watching. I don't think those last two are part of TV's golden age, but this week was a timely moment to once again reflect on the era of bountiful TV choice. So, Willa, as the TV critic on this roundtable, how are you handling such just a bounty of television? How do you watch it all? How do you keep up with it all?
Well, you know, I actually think this is a funny, sweet kind of problem that we all have, this too much TV, where it's like TV has become sort of just like books in the sense that people are really stressed out that they haven't consumed this highbrow, you know, that they'll be out of the conversation in some essential way and seem sort of dopey and uninformed.
Oh, and I had to give up books a long time ago now. There's no time.
Right. You know, I think the fact that there's too much TV can be problematic for people's DVRs, and that's the only real place that is problematic. We should all watch what we want to watch. We should watch as much of it as we can. And the fact that there's really good stuff just waiting for you when you have more time, I think that seems like totally delightful. The stress about it, even as someone who has to watch a lot of it, I don't quite understand, because I just think it's okay. It's a TV show. You missed it. You can catch it up later.
Everyone has that show that they're kind of guilty and they feel embarrassed that they haven't been watching because they should be, just because there isn't any time. Willa, is there a show that...
Right, it's like the new guilty pleasure is not actually a thing you're embarrassed to watch. It's a thing you're embarrassed you missed.
To admit that you're not watching.
Right, or whatever.
So I'm putting you on the spot now, but what aren't you watching that you wish you were?
Well, the thing I don't wish that I was, but I'm not watching The Walking Dead, which I think is probably not a thing that I should be doing. I think I should probably be watching The Walking Dead.
You're in the minority.
Yeah, but
I am not watching either.
So much stuff that we do get to account a little bit for our own taste, and I found with watching The Walking Dead to be an experience that made me a scold to the people that loved it for no reason. So I've kind of excised that from my diet.
Well, Joe, here's one of my favorite stats. Actually, at FX, the head of FX, John Landgraf, likes to throw this number around. He always points out that when FX launched The Shield way back in, I believe, 2002, there were only 35 scripted shows on cable, and now there's over 150, and that number keeps growing. At some point, is there a shakeout?
Well, I don't know when it's going to come, because it's just getting – it's now not just more cable. There are new cable networks coming online every day. Pretty soon we're going to have WGN America in the next few weeks coming on with its first original series that nobody really asked for, but they're going to give it to us anyway.
Right. It's called Salem. It's a witch drama. It takes place in Salem, Massachusetts, obviously.
Set your DVRs? Yeah. You've also got some of the streaming giants that are coming in. Amazon now is looking like it might pick up to four new shows, and they're actually – some of them them are pretty darn good. There's certainly options. You've got Netflix with the shows it has. There definitely is multitude of choice. I do think there could be a shakeout. You know, one of the reasons we're talking about this now is because there was a column by the New York Times' David Carr this week, sort of picking up on a theme that others have written before him, this theme of, oh, there's too much to watch. And I'm sort of with Willa. You know, all of this falls under the Twitter hashtag of high-class problems because, you know, the intellectual elite has always been worried about what they are or aren't watching. I'm much more interested in what this means for the people who create and program television networks. And it goes back to what we were just talking about with ABC. There is so much. And so this idea that viewers can find these shows in a quick way is ludicrous. I was talking to someone who's a showrunner who's created both single camera and multi-camera comedies. And he was talking about his 15-year-old daughter who is a voracious fan of television shows. She loves, which makes her dad very happy. But she doesn't ever know what channel those shows are on. She never knows what time slot they're in. She just knows she likes these shows, and sometimes she watches them in 3 or 4 episode bulks or batches. Sometimes she watches them every week, but they just show up on her DVR and she watches them. This same showrunner said he can't remember the last time he's watched a TV commercial. And it raises the point of where TV is going and whether or not the whole idea of ad-supported television is completely long for this world in an era where it's increasingly easy to watch what you want to watch when you want to watch. Networks, to succeed, are going to have to figure out a way to make it all work and to monetize them, even if they can't monetize them with the eyeballs that are available when the shows debut after one night or even 7 nights with DVRs. They've got to figure out other revenue streams to pay for it. Or like you said, Mike, there could be a shakeout.
Well, yeah, that's what's going to happen. I think you're right in that not all of these new shows are going to get an audience. And at some point, there just isn't the money. I mean, it costs a lot of money to launch a scripted series division. And you've got E! Doing it, Bravo doing it, Sundance Channel's into it, Discovery, History, all these channels getting into that business. They were doing quite well with unscripted product, but they all have this scripted envy now because things like the Hatfields and McCoys did so well and the Bible did so well. So everyone needs to be in that, but the audience isn't necessarily going to be there for every project. And when a couple of these fail and networks lose a lot of money on it and there isn't the advertising to back it up, then we may see a couple of networks say, you know what, we're going to stick with the Kardashians instead.
Or you
but
know
the
what?
Issue is, no, but the issue isn't just, there was just a piece in the New York Times in the last 6 months about the AMC model. They're not just envious. The fact is, when you have a show like Mad Men, you get huge amounts of money from the cable subscriber. You know, you're
right.
Not from your audience, not from ads, from cable. You can charge more money
right.
Just to be put in people's homes. So the business model of having original programming that everybody wants to see is actually not entirely contingent at all on having these huge audiences. It's having sort of a water cooler show that does it, even with a small audience. And
right.
That has been really beneficial to all these other networks.
And you're
but
right.
You know,
I wanted to add on what you were saying. That you're right, because it's all about extracting the subscriber fees from cable MSOs.
Exactly. And the one thing also that, Joe, that you were saying, you know, the girl who watches so much TV and she doesn't know what network it's on. On the one hand, that's clearly true. On the other hand, you know, you see something like True Detective, which just became this huge phenomenon, I think really because it was on HBO. Like, it's very hard to imagine that happening to that extent. You know, firstly, being able to put together a show that has 2 movie stars in it, you know, being able to just do it in this sort of limited runway to create this sort of event around it, it'd be really hard for any other network to kind of have pulled all that together and to kind of have that sort of focus and attention on it. So on the one hand, nobody knows where their TV comes from. On the other hand, the networks that do have a brand that are special in some way that we recognize their initials, I think are in a position of more power than ever, because it's like they can create an event just by announcing that they're putting
right.
out the show and,
well,
and they can get those eyeballs. So it's like, you know, for the many, it's kind of a bad place to be. But for the few, I think it's even better than ever just to be putting out all this stuff.
Well, that's why the cable and networks and streaming networks have a little bit of an upside, because they can have those sharply defined brands. And I think you're right. I think that it's more important than ever to sort of have those brands and to sort of stand out. Like, by the way, AMC is another network that's benefited greatly from having those early shows walk with Mad Men and Breaking Bad, because now whenever they put something out there, they're guaranteed of not getting an audience. There's certainly plenty of shows that will not get an audience and have been canceled on AMC, but they sort of get considered. They're getting in the game, and I think that's important. But, Will, going back to your point about the whole cable subscribers and how that and why it's a good model, that's where I think if there's going to be a shakeout, if there's going to be a pushback, it's going to come because – subscribers to cable and satellite are going to get sick of the exploding bills. We all, even if we don't watch the TV ads, we still pay for all these networks to make all these shows because AMC wants to get paid more money, and that is passed on to us, the consumer who subscribes. If we start finally saying no, if enough of us cut the cord, go somewhere else, or cable operators push back, as we've seen all these disputes between cable companies and networks, if those come to a head and people say forget about it, at some point there will be a shakeout, and we'll – I don't know if it's going to be a la carte that does it, if that ever gets to that point. Definitely the cable industry doesn't want that to happen because they know that will be the end of the gravy train. At some point, viewers are going to say, we love you, Hollywood. We don't want to pay for all your shows. We don't want to pay to see what WGN America is bringing to the market. No offense to WGN. You know, and so if that pushback comes, watch out.
Well, that's probably that a different topic bursting. Entirely, but I think it's a bigger issue with the sports channels, the fact that we're, you know, as subscribers, we're all paying $5 for a single channel here in L.A., for example, the Dodger channel that's coming on that not everyone wants. But I think one other thing I want to bring up about the sheer amount of programming that's now being created is, you know, you talk to agents, you talk to development execs around town. The other thing that they're really concerned about, that they're starting to really see, is the talent crunch. Obviously, there's a finite number of excellent writers, finite number of excellent actors. And at some point, when there are so many shows on the air, you do have to go with your second choice, your third choice. And what's going to be interesting in the coming years is with everyone now working and there are plenty of products, projects in development and actually being produced, what's that going to leave these newer shows? And are they going to suffer from maybe having the rookies or the B-level actors and the B-level writers?
I'm really amused by this idea that bad TV will be worse than bad TV has been in the past. I mean, that may be true, but I'm pretty sure bad TV was just as bad like 20 years ago as it will continue to be.
Bad TV will always be bad TV. Well, let's move on to our final topic. Let's talk Amazon, guys. So, of course, we know Amazon. It was long the go-to site for online shopping made easy. But this company has had an interest in the entertainment business for a while. They own IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, which I don't think a lot of us actually know. But they've been really trying to rebrand their instant video service as a site for original programming. They've already aired a couple of series, such as Alpha House and Betas. Now they've got a few more shows that are in the works. They're close to picking up four new series, a couple from notable creators like Chris Carter with known stars. So Willa, I don't know, have you watched any of these, and are any of them worth watching?
I've seen watched all of the Amazon pilots. It's interesting. I think Amazon is basically a microcosm of what we were just talking about, which is they put out a bunch of shows last year. They put out like 11 pilots and they picked up Betas and Alpha House, but it was a very low key and basically nobody paid any attention. And I think with this round of shows, they sort of realized if we want to kind of compete with Netflix or anybody else, any other upstart cable company, you know, that's making original programming, we have to do something that's kind of flashier and better. So they had more people that have credits and history do stuff for them. That said, of the four shows they picked up the Chris Carter show called The After. They picked up the show Bosch. They picked up Jill Soloway's Transparent. And they picked up, I'm blanking on the name, but it's
Mozart in the Jungle.
Mozart in the Jungle.
Yeah, that's Roman Coppola's.
Roman Coppola's Mozart in the Jungle. So two comedies and two dramas. I thought the dramas were both bad. Like, The After is bad in to the extent that it's surprising the guy who made The X-Files made it, honestly. It features also a French actress who cannot – I mean, she's very attractive. She is a terrible actress. It felt very, like, lesser than lesser than USA programming, basically.
Wow. That's a low blow, Willa.
You're wrong, Willa.
Bosch, I thought was better, but sort of cliched about a kind of tortured cop character with a sort of sordid, backstory that's a very dark backstory that had more potential and stars, Titus, the Titus Wolliver for the guy from Lost. And then I thought Transparent was great, like a really great show that felt very much like an HBO comedy, so not particularly funny necessarily, but very much in the vein of Louie and Girls, which, of course, not a lot of people watch those shows, so it's not as if a ton of people are going to be watching Amazon for it. But I thought at least finally seemed like the kind of thing that could get it into the critical conversation, which I think is really important. Where Amazon is right now, it's really important to sort of make itself seem like a heady player in that.
Right. And just like Netflix, you know, to some degree, ratings don't matter for Amazon. As long as people are actually subscribing to the instant video service, then they'll be happy. And yes. Maybe having shows like this, I mean, Transparent's the one actually I'm really looking forward to, too. It's got a great cast, including Jeffrey Tambor as well. So I'd like to see more of that. But I was kind of, I got to admit, I'm a little turned off by their whole pilot process. The fact that Amazon famously now uploads all of their pilots for people to watch and, you know, allegedly vote on and decide which ones will actually be brought to series. It's maybe a little too gimmicky for me, and it's sort of not really what the pilot process is all about. And I'm a little turned off by that. What about you guys?
I think it's a little for show, though. I'm not sure that they don't, you know, they've talked about, they had these surveys for people to fill out afterwards, and not even this time, I think last time. And they were like, we're going to crunch the numbers and find out what people liked. It was also combined with their own intel and information and assessment.
Right,
of course. I think that, and honestly, I also think, and I could be wrong, that truthfully, what people want to see and what they want to put on probably in this instance overlapped very significantly. Like, I don't think that they got crazy information from the people watching the shows. You know, that however many people were interested to watch Amazon's pilots, which cannot be that many, you know, was super different than what they were thinking on their own end.
Joe, have you watched any of these?
I've watched them all except for Bosch and The Dishwasher Show. And, I liked them all to some degree. I thought The Rebels, the show that didn't get picked up, supposedly, not, again, Amazon hasn't confirmed, was just sort of cheesy. I liked After more than Willa did. and I think I liked Mozart in the Jungle in some ways more than Transparent, even though Transparent's a much more transcendent show. Mozart in the Jungle was more fun and kind of cool to watch. I'll say this. I talked to Roy Price, who's the head of Amazon's original programming department. And, you know, he sort of said what you might hear from someone at Netflix or HBO, which is for them, it's not about how many people watch our shows. It's about how deeply they feel and get connected to the show and how many passionate responses they get. So when they hear someone like Willa or Vulture's critic, Margaret Lyons, or other people sort of raving and people who are answering these surveys say, God, I've got to see this again, that's what they want. They want to create shows that people really fall in love with and that they're willing to pay $80 a year to get Amazon Prime to watch. You know, that's what this is all about. It's all about engaging viewers in a way that makes them feel I've got to subscribe and, of course, get my free shipping. So I think they made a tremendous amount of progress with this batch of new shows. I agree with Willa. I think it's all just a marketing stunt, the whole pilot thing. But you know what? It's a good thing early on because it got them noticed. You know, Netflix was the HBO in this equation. They were the first into the waters. They have the brand appeal. They are right now sort of what Kleenex is to tissue paper in streaming media. They are the Netflix. They are the generic name. I'm going to Netflix it. I'm going to even if you're watching something on Hulu or Amazon, you're sort of Netflixing it. They're the leader.
I haven't heard it yet. I haven't heard people say that, but
well, I've said it, so okay. therefore that counts.
It shall be so.
Check the story out on Vulture.com unless my editor took it out. Anyway, but they are sort of even more so the HBO in this equation. So Netflix is the leader. Amazon has been sort of in the Showtime thing. They have to play a little bit of a catch-up. And Showtime certainly has caught up in the last few years. And I think with this batch, suddenly Amazon is in the game, and that's what matters. It doesn't matter that people filled out those reviews or they made a marketing stunt. It matters that it got all of us to write about, ooh, look how Amazon's changing the game. Isn't that interesting? It doesn't matter if it really is happening that way. It's just a way of sort of getting people's attention. And that's what they've done. They've stood out. Now they've stood out with interesting shows, and that's what they have to continue doing. And if they keep doing that, I think Amazon's going to be a yet another player in this space. Now it's up to Hulu to sort of, which has also entered with original shows and has done some decent shows. I've liked some of their stuff.
I like your analogy. So Hulu is probably the stars of this equation, which
they need to get a sword and sandal epic up fast.
One of the things that I thought was interesting about what Amazon did last time and moved away from this time a little bit is, you know, they saw that there was this hole in comedy, basically, that like Netflix hadn't really gotten into comedy, that HBO has been having trouble with comedy. And so they sort of tried to make comedies. And then because they kind of didn't have it, maybe they weren't flashy enough on the one hand. But then I think on the other hand, they just ran into this problem, which is like if you're trying to establish yourself as a prestige location, part of this conversation, it's just much easier to do it with dramas. So it will be interesting to see if Amazon can do it on the back of something like Transparent, which again, I don't particularly think is a comedy in the sort of classic sense of it, but it, you know, it's a half hour show. And if they have success with that, I think there is room for someone to really try to do what Netflix has done, but more with comedies. I mean, Arrested Development aside.
Well, guys, we're at that point of the show now where we go around the room and we each download the story or the show that's top of mind this month. So, Joe, why don't we start with you?
What I'm excited about this month is the coming return of HBO's Veep, as well as a new entry to their Sunday night comedy schedule, Silicon Valley. Veep, of course, is great, and I cannot wait to see the political shenanigans return. But Silicon Valley comes from Mike Judge, the creator of Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill, and he's done a show that sort of reminds me of the good early year of Entourage meets the corporate politics or the politics of Veep. It's all about the world of a startup app company and these guys who are trying to break into the business. It's just really deep, fun comedy that is really worth watching.
All right. Thanks, Joe. And Willa, what are you thinking about this month?
I actually have been thinking about Veronica Mars, which the movie comes out on Friday. And I saw it, and I thought it was really – it was really fun. I've loved that show for a long time. And I thought it was a really like kind of perfect fan delivery system for exactly what you want it to be, as well as being this just really interesting product. You know, it's like it's this Kickstartered show. Is it going to make any money? Does it need to make any money? Is this going to be the first thing of its kind? Is it going to be one of the very few things of its kind? And I think that they really like cleared the bar on making it enjoyable and fun and delightful enough for people who care about the show to sort of at least on an artistic level, make this sort of project not seem completely crazy. Whether or not it seems completely crazy because it makes any money or not is a whole other question that we'll, you know, see what happens. But I was really impressed, basically, with they sort of just did exactly what everyone wanted them to do. And they made something that if you like the show, there's like it's almost impossible. You will be powerless not to like this film.
So you are a marshmallow.
I am a marshmallow. That's
all right.
True.
Well, for my download, so I got to give a shout out to Fox's Cosmos. I went to the premiere screening a couple weeks ago, and it's rare to go to an event like this and come away actually feeling good about the entertainment industry. You know, the amount of effort and marketing support that Fox put into launching the new 2014 take on Cosmos to me was pretty astounding. And it's a real commitment. They picked up 13 episodes of what's essentially a gussied up science documentary. But the program lives up to the hype, and Neil deGrasse Tyson's a great host. He was made for this job, taking the baton from his childhood idol, the late Carl Sagan, and hopefully introducing a whole new generation to the wonders of the universe in an age where, you know, we're not really talking about science that much. And as a matter of fact, science is being strangely attacked for the sole means of politics. So this is a show that I hope many adults will watch as well. And I'm definitely going to be tuning in each week with my 9-year-old. So that's it for this month. Thanks very much to our guest today, Slate's TV critic, Willa Paskin. Thanks, Willa.
Thank you.
And also Joe Adalian, who's the West Coast editor for New York Magazine's Vulture. Thanks as always, Joe.
See you soon, Mike.
You can follow Joe on Twitter at TVMojo. And you can follow Willa on Twitter as well. Her handle is at Willa Paskin. And my Twitter handle, meanwhile, is at Franklin Avenue. That's it for this edition of The Spinoff, the TV podcast from KCRW's The Business. This episode and all episodes of KCRW's The Business is produced by Darby Maloney. Melissa Morton is our technical director, and special thanks this month to the good people at KUNV in Las Vegas and also to Argo Studios in New York. You can hear The Spinoff and The Business on iTunes, Stitcher, and pretty much anywhere that you download podcasts. You can also check us out on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. That's it for our TV party. We'll see you next month. TV party tonight!